Have you ever looked at an ordinary object, a table, perhaps, and wondered what it truly is? Bertrand Russell's The Problems of Philosophy invites us into this fundamental question. When we perceive a table, what are we actually experiencing? The table appears differently depending on lighting, angle, and perspective. Round from one position, oval from another. Brown in daylight, grayish at dusk. Which version represents the real table? The startling answer, none of them individually, yet all collectively hint at something beyond our immediate perceptions. This distinction between appearance, our sensory experience, and reality, what exists independently, forms the foundation of philosophical inquiry. We instinctively believe our perceptions correspond to something real outside our minds, but justifying this belief proves remarkably difficult. Could everything be just my dream? While this radical doubt, known as solipsism, cannot be logically disproven, Russell offers compelling reasons to reject it. Consider what happens when multiple people observe the same object. If I see a table and you also see it, the simplest explanation is that we're both perceiving the same physical object. Similarly, when I leave a room and return to find furniture unchanged, the most straightforward explanation is that objects continued existing in my absence. Think about how we navigate daily life. You place your phone on a table, leave the room, and expect it to be there when you return. This expectation makes sense only if physical objects persist independently of perception, following consistent physical laws. The table appears solid and colored to our senses, yet physics reveals it's mostly empty space with moving particles. Both descriptions are valid. The scientific view shows its physical structure, while our perception shows how it appears to consciousness. These two worlds, perception, colors, sounds, textures, and physics, particles, waves, forces, offer complementary perspectives on reality. Consider a sunset. We experience beautiful colors, while physics describes scattered light waves of varying wavelengths. Both accounts accurately describe different aspects of the same phenomenon. Some philosophers propose idealism, the view that physical objects are just collections of perceptions existing only in minds, with God's mind maintaining their existence when unobserved. However, this view confuses the act of perception with what is perceived. When you see the moon, there's your mental act of seeing and the physical moon itself. Idealism also fails to explain the marked difference between perception and imagination. A perceived table has a vividness and independence that an imagined one lacks. Russell distinguishes between knowledge by acquaintance, direct awareness without inference, and knowledge by description, indirect identification through unique properties. Knowledge by acquaintance includes immediate experiences like seeing colors or feeling pain. Knowledge by description refers to things we understand through their properties without direct experience, like the tallest mountain on earth. Physical objects and other minds are known only by description. Russell argues all knowledge ultimately reduces to elements we're acquainted with, even when extending beyond direct experience. The concept of a priori knowledge, knowledge independent of experience, is illustrated by mathematical truths like 2 plus 2 equals 4. Unlike empirical facts that could be disproven, like all swans are white, mathematical truths seem necessarily true. While we learn these truths through specific examples, experience merely prompts our recognition rather than proving them. This insight bridges the empiricist-rationalist debate. Knowledge of existence requires experience, yet some knowledge possesses a necessity that experience alone cannot explain. Why do we believe the sun will rise tomorrow? Our confidence that the future will resemble the past, that nature follows uniform patterns, underlies all practical reasoning and scientific inquiry. Yet justifying this belief creates a fascinating puzzle. The principle of induction states that the more frequently we observe phenomena occurring together, the more probable it is they'll continue occurring together. This principle underlies everything from scientific theories to everyday expectations. When you expect water to boil at 100 C or your phone to turn on when you press the power button, you're applying induction, generalizing from past experience to future cases. But here's the problem. We cannot prove induction without circular reasoning. Any attempt to justify induction by appealing to its past success already assumes what we're trying to prove, that past patterns will continue. If I argue, induction has worked before, so it will work again, I'm already using inductive reasoning to justify induction itself. Even the most established scientific theories ultimately rest on the unprovable assumption that the future will resemble the past. This doesn't mean we should doubt induction in practice. It works remarkably well. Rather, it reveals a limitation of human knowledge, our inability to prove the very principles that make empirical knowledge possible. Some principles must be accepted as starting points for reasoning rather than as conclusions from other premises. What's particularly interesting is that science itself depends on perception. All scientific instruments ultimately produce something we can perceive: numbers on a display, lines on a graph, images on a screen. Science begins with observations and ends with theories explaining those observations. Yet these theories often describe a world quite unlike what we directly experience, creating a productive tension between our immediate experience and our best scientific understanding. The mind's distinctive power is precisely its ability to be acquainted with things other than itself. The idealist mistake is assuming that because perception is mental, everything perceived must also be mental. But this doesn't follow logically. Imagine watching a horror movie. Your fear is mental, but does that make the movie itself mental? This theory elegantly explains how knowledge can be both personal, grounded in direct experience, and objective, extending beyond individual perspective. Universals like whiteness, brotherhood, and spatial relations are fundamentally different from particular things we experience through our senses. When we say, "This paper is white," we connect a particular, the paper, to a universal, whiteness, that can apply to many objects. We recognize the same color red across different objects, like strawberries and stop signs, because the universal redness transcends specific instances. Language reflects this distinction. Proper names refer to particulars, while adjectives, verbs, and prepositions represent universals. Relations between things are key universals. For example, "Edinburgh is north of London" asserts a relation that exists independently of our minds, yet doesn't exist in space and time like physical objects. This leads to Russell's key insight. Universals have being rather than existence. They subsist timelessly, unlike particulars in the temporal world. The number 2, for instance, has no physical location, yet possesses a reality that enables true statements about it.